לשידור ישיר ממחנה רמה בברקשיירס.
כל רמה 102.3 מגישים קיץ באוויר.
רדיו כל רמה 102.3 FM.
Shalom and welcome to another edition of Parsha Talk. Rabbi Elliot Malman in Highland Park, New Jersey, at the Highland Park Conservative Temple Congregation on Chiamet. Joining me are my good friends, Rabbi Barry Chesler, Ramachek, the Day School of Long Island, Rabbi Jordan Kalmanowski, Anshek Chesed, New York City. We are recording this on Chol HaMoed Pesach. Today is day 202, 203 of the war. We are thinking of the hostages. Don't think that there's been a moment or a day or without that, certainly since Passover. And I know that many of us, all of us, you know, devoted some time, some thinking to the situation in Israel at our Seders, our recent Seders. And we're hoping that all the people that are joining us watching this had very, very meaningful Pesach celebrations, even in the situation that we are experiencing as Kol Yisrael. And so here we are. We are moving in this calendar year towards Shabbat Chol HaMoed and towards Shvi Shel Pesach and the last day of Pesach. And we're going to take a look at a couple of things that are part of this. This comes after the reading of Shir HaShirim. I think we'll focus first on the reading for the seventh day, and then if we have time, we'll do some Song of Songs, which is traditionally recited on the Shabbat of Chol HaMoed. But the seventh day of Pesach reading, and it has as its centerpiece the Song of the Sea. And the reason for that is because traditionally it's on the seventh day of Pesach that the Israelites are believed to have crossed the Red Sea. Am I getting that correct? Is that
so far?
So far.
Wait, okay. What do you mean believed? That's a historical fact.
They believed
to have crossed. They crossed the Red Sea on Shvi Shel Pesach.
Okay, so here we go. We're going to daven this out. And so on Shvi Shel Pesach, they got there. They got to the Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds, Yam Suf, and the Egyptians are chasing them, and it's terrifying for them. And Moshe doesn't know what to do. He turns to God. He screams to God. And God says, "What are you screaming at me? Deber al b'nei Israel. Tell them to go." And they go.
It's not the time to daven.
Exactly.
And Moses' descendants took that out of his words.
There you go.
There are thousands of years afterwards. It's not the time to daven.
So they get there. And we have, I want to kind of get into the scene where they get through somehow during the night. They come to the other side. And I want to be that Israelite on the other side. And it says here in chapter 14, verses 30 and 31, Vayosha Adonai Bayom Ahu. This is a text that should be familiar to us from the daily prayers. God saved him on that day. God saved Israel from Egypt, Miad Mitzrayim, Vayarit Yisrael Mitzrayim, Met Asfat Hayam. Israel saw Egypt dead on the sides of the body of water, or the sea. Vayar Yisrael Et Yad Hagdola. Israel saw the great arm, Asher Asa Adonai B'Mitzrayim, that God did in Egypt. Vayir'u Ha'amet Adonai. They feared God, and they had trust in God and in Moshe. And then, Az Yashir Moshe, we get this jubilant exaltation, this poem and song that is about the victory. Ashira ladunai ki ga'oga'a sus v'rochvo ramah v'yam. I sing to God, for God has given me lift, right? Sus v'rochvo, his horse and chariot, has he is thrown into the sea. And so on the one hand, I want to be that Israelite that is on the other side of the sea and is now in a chorus. And yet I find it very difficult to not to believe, but to identify that the first instinct of that Israelite is going to be to stand in a chorus and to do, like, you know what Kululam is? You know, have you ever seen the Kululam? So those are magnificent.
I love those.
They are magnificent, magnificent productions. Kululam, for our listeners or viewers who don't know, there's a movement in Israel of getting people, everybody, they get them into stadiums and arenas and you know, all sorts of, you know, places, large events. They teach them a song in not complicated 4 or 3 part harmony. It's ecstatic. It's jubilant. It's exuberant.
It's so wonderful. And let's just say, so much has happened since 2019, when that was all the rage. It was like Kulam, and they were going to come to New York, and then there was COVID, and then there was the democracy movements, and then there's the war, and the innocence and joyfulness and just beauty of those performances, which are all about hope and togetherness. They are the most life-affirming things in the world. They can feel a little hard to get in touch with right now, gotta say.
Well, I know someone. I have someone in my shul who actually is in Israel now and went to one, and like, it's a bucket list thing. That's what, you know, she wanted to do this, you know, and I would love to do this. I would like, you know, what a great thing to do, to be with thousands of people and to sing your heart out. You know, there's an amazing video of Holocaust survivors and their children and grandchildren. You know, Anior Chai, da 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 da, and you see this, and it's just it's jubilant.
I cannot watch that without just
with weeping, and that's
sobbing.
Exactly it. You know,
so Elliot, so why can't you imagine that same scene at the Sea of Reeds?
I'll tell you why. Because I'm exhausted. I mean, if I'm an Israelite, wait. I want to finish it. If I'm an Israelite, I went through the whole night, you know, during getting my feet wet in the mud and getting to the other side. I don't want to sing. I want to just kind of, can I sit for a second?
I have to disagree with you here. I think that many of us have had the experience that as soon as the shofar is blown on Yom Kippur, we're no longer hungry for a little while because we no longer have to fast. Now it's our choice. And I think that once the Israelites realize, once they see that God has delivered them, they get an adrenaline rush and they burst into song. But what I would like to say also is that the Shira, and especially the way that you describe the moments leading up to it, is really a dramatic counterpoint to Dayenu and suggests how impoverished a song Dayenu is. Because had they not gotten to the other side of the Sea of Reeds, I venture to say that most of the Israelites would have thought everything had been in vain. They would not have said Dayenu. They needed to get to the other side. And when they get there, they have this double vision. First, they see the dead Egyptians, but they understand it as being God's saving power. And I think that's a motivator and an energizer and leads them to burst into song. And it's an incredibly powerful song.
It's an incredibly powerful song, and it may in fact convey all of the emotions that you're talking about, but in that mix of emotions, there is this idea, and it's a question that I think you've raised previously, which is that moment an end or a beginning? And if it's an end, then okay, I think, you know, we can celebrate and we can cheer and sing. If it's a beginning, I'm nervous about this, and I'm also I want to go back to just pure raw physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual fatigue. I'm not sure that you know, at the end of the day, I mean, this is not like, you know, winning the Super Bowl, right? Or is it? I don't know. I mean, are, you know, they're exhausted, they're jumping up for joy. I mean, Is this what it is?
this no, but I think, you know, it's worthwhile thinking about what actually happened.
Okay.
So you wanted to imagine yourself as an Israelite going through the Sea of Reeds. So how wet are you?
Yeah, really?
Are you up to your ankles, to your knees? You know, one midrash says they were up to their necks.
Yeah.
So how wet are you?
So I think my feet, it's dry land, okay? But how dry is the dry land? Don't know, okay? I'm thinking, I'm just projecting that I have a family and I'm watching everybody, making sure that everybody is accounted for. And and if you've ever just loaded up a car, you know, there's an enormous amount of stress involved in that. I mean, imagine going, you know, several hundred, you know, thousand meters, you know, doing this. And it's dark and you're following thing and there's tons and tons of people.
So there's a Yehuda Amichai poem, which is on this, on the nose. Goes like this. I just called it up on my computer. Merachok kol davar nira nes. Aval mikarov gam nes lo nirakach. From a distance, everything looks like a miracle. But up close, even a miracle doesn't look like one. Afilu misha avar biyam suf bevikiyat hayam ra'arak et hagav hemezia shal ha'olech lefanav v'yetno yirechav hagdolot. Even someone who crossed the Red Sea at the splitting of the ocean saw only the sweaty back of the guy ahead of him and the motion of his fat thighs. Like, this is just such an awesome poem about the way these incredible, the poem goes on a little bit, but there's such an awesome poem about the disjunction between the story in the Torah, which is, yes, there's suffering in the world, but the world is ultimately in order. We are rescued. We are on our journey to the promised land. By the way, the promised land is far away. You're going to walk into the desert. It's not easy. You got to walk out. You got to walk through the desert. But the two things that you guys are saying, at one level, Elliot's saying, what do you see? You see the sweaty back of the fat guy in front of you. And Barry's saying, but you're actually on your way to the promised land.
Right. Okay. So you know what? I want to go into the first verse. I'll pose this for you. So I'm going to try and solve my problem here, which is, okay, I'm so exhausted. And I don't have the cheshek. I don't have the energy to do this. But it says, Az yashir Moshe uvnei Yisrael et ashira azot. So when I live inside that verse for a second, all of a sudden I do get the strength, okay? And here's
why.
Why? I'll tell you why.
And now I'll tell you after you're done.
I'll tell you why. Because I'm with everybody. I get the strength from everybody. I'm a social creature. One second. I'm a social creature. And this is the moment, the one moment, when I have whatever I have. I don't need food, I don't need water, I don't need the physical carbohydrate energy. I have my connection to the person in front of me, and I have total trust in my leader, I have total trust in God, and nothing else matters at this moment, and then I could sing. Okay, so I can forget all the exhaustion. So I've gone to your place there.
So I think what has happened, just in terms of the text, is that the last line is by Yaminu Baranai of Moshe Avdo. When they see this as the hand of God, they now trust Moses and God, or God and Moses. And, you know, it's interesting that you added completely trust. And Moses is the first one to sing, if we parse the verse. Az Asher Moshe. And we understand the Vav not as a conjunction, but as sequential. Moses began to sing, and then the people joined him, and that's why they can sing, even though they're exhausted. Because they're not singing on their own, they're singing with Moshe.
Right, and so here is the deep anguish here, which is that in a moment when the world is intact and you have a bond with your leader and all of the structures around you who govern you and have authority over you, that's you can sing with that. And I think, you know, again, I don't want to, you know, focus too much, but it's part of this, which is the crisis that we are going through is a crisis where there's no trust. There's no, the structures of authority and the bonds that exist between the people, Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, Israel, and a structure of authority around it, those bonds have been broken. And that's very, very painful. But here in the text, we have a moment that's exuberant precisely because everybody's intact.
If we go with the image, then I think what makes this so great, and I have to say, Jeremy, parenthetically, that can't imagine Amichai's poem being said every day during Shachrit.
Yeah, okay.
Right, the poetic moment is in the Torah here, not, and Amichai, as beautiful and important as the poem is. I lost my train of thought.
The whole notion.
That's the problem with live podcasts, because then that happens, and then you say, "What was I going to say?" Shoot.
Yeah, and it was so good.
It was brilliant. I know it was.
We'll have to rewind it. Okay, we'll go on then. Ashira ladunai ki gaoga asus vrachroma oziv zimrat yavaili shua. This is my strength. God is my strength and my salvation. Ze eli v'anvehu. This is my God, and I will make him beautiful. I will make something anave. I will make a house. I'll make a dwelling. Eloi avi v'aromenu. God of my father, and I will exalt him. Okay, any takers for that? Neve to
good make verses. This is the source of our idea of Hidur Mitzvah.
Yeah.
I will, this is my God, and I will make God's realm beautiful. This is rabbinic creativity. It's not what the verse means, but it's a good thing that we did with it, is that you have to, in your practice of Judaism, not only just execute the bare minimum, but try to make it beautiful.
Right. And of course, there's also a generational thing going on. It's mine, but my father also.
The Bible's poetry tends to, this is their signature move, it's some sort of parallelism. It might be this and also this even more. It might be this and the opposite of that. It might be two identical synonymous phrases. But here we have this affirmation, which could mean, you know, generational conflict. Ze'eli, I have to follow my God. And also there's this other one that I've inherited through the traditions, which is like true for every Jew, right? Some sort of experience of your own relationship to this, you know, your own spirituality, your own connection with the divine. And it comes mediated through Elohe Avi, your ancestral inheritance.
Okay, so I want to ask the question, which has been kind of gnawing at me, and something that I want to be able to provide for my synagogue, and to access texts and a text like this and say, does this text reflect hope? And in what way would you say that something like this conveys a hope? You know, given that here we are in a moment where, as Rachel Goldberg Poland says, hope is mandatory. I mean, that was a line that was quoted, you know, often at many, many seders, you know, from things that were published all over. Hope is mandatory. We have to hope in situations. And of course, you know, during this whole experience, we're constantly navigating between, you know, the sense of hope and maybe despair, the sense of obligation. Does the song itself trigger hope, or does it stimulate hope, or does it exercise the muscle of hope, or should we look somewhere else for that? Is there anywhere else, you know, in the text, or anywhere else, you know, given the, okay, so take Song of Songs, or take Spring, or take Pesach itself, or take anything. Where would you go for that?
So I think that the prosaic moment here is that the song is the crystallization of hope in words, that when we are awestruck, we often lose our capacity for speech. But the song allows us to put our thoughts and feelings and emotions into words that can express the way we feel, but also teach us how we feel. And there's a kind of, let's say, call it poetry in motion, where we go between the two poles, where the words express what we feel and teach us how we should feel as well. And I finally remembered what I wanted to say, that what happens, I think the image of going through the Sea of Reeds is that the Israelites have secure footing, that the image is that they're walking with confidence because it's on dry land. Our moment in 2024 in the midst of war is we've lost our footing and we're not quite balanced and we're still struggling to get to an equilibrium.
All right, I want to take this, and if you guys and our listeners will forgive me, I'm going to go real JTS on you, which is that that Shirat Hayam is actually a little bit of a mashup of a couple of different things, and it doesn't quite make sense. But I'm going to interpret this in a way which I hope does respond to this question that you posed, Elliot, about whence the hope? You know, where do you find the hope? So what do I mean by it's a mashup? Part of it is clearly about the Red Sea, you know, the blast of your nose, the nostrils, the waters piled up and the floods were a wall and it was the depths of the heart of the sea. And the foe said, I will chase them down. But you blasted with your breath and then the waters covered them over, and they sank like lead to the bottom of the ocean. All this is clearly about Shirat Hayam. Then it's talked about something that hasn't happened yet. Nachita bechastacha amzuga alta, nahalta beozecha el neve kodshecha. In your love, in your chesed, you led them. And in your might, you led them to your holy abode. And the people heard, and the Philistines heard, and the Moabites heard, and the Canaanites were terrified, and all of those things that made them tipol alehem emata vafachad bigdol zurachai yidmu. They fell silent at your might, ka'aven, like a stone. Those things haven't happened yet. Tivi'emu v'titaemu bahar nachalatecha. You bring them, I mean, you can say it'll future tense, but it describes reaching Behar Nachalatecha, the mountain of your inheritance, Mechon Neshivtecha Pa'alta Adonai, a place for your dwelling place you have made, God, Mikdash Adonai Konenu Yadecha, your hands have already made the sanctuary. We are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in Shirat Hayam before any of that happens. So what you have actually as a text is a little bit of a rough mashup between a praise text for crossing the Red Sea into uncertainty, into the desert, into a long journey ahead of you, and one that's like from the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, Solomon's time or after that, that says, okay, look at how this has already all come together. So what I want to say is that, and here's perhaps I'm going to work a little hard to squeeze the hope out of here. But as a Jew, you inherit not only the Bible text of what's happening to the Israelites, and they're going to walk through the desert, and that's going to be imposing, intimidating. They might not make it. Well, actually, you're inheriting as a Jew. You're saying this every morning in worship, every single morning, and certainly on Passover. You're inheriting the whole story. You're inheriting the exile and you're inheriting the homecoming and you're inheriting the building and you're inheriting the destruction. And to me, if you inherit all that stuff together, that makes the whole piece bearable. That makes the whole piece worthwhile. So I'm going to inherit that the people are in the tunnels in Gaza and it's devastating. And I'm going to inherit that they were in the Shoah, in the camps, and I'm going to inherit that they came out and that they, you know, like we, it's like in our own lifetimes, we've seen Shivat Zion. We've seen the return to the homeland. And how can you like you got to inherit both parts of the song. And if you do, like I had a conversion candidate who was actually a Barnard student, very distressed at everything that's going on at Columbia. And she said, what do I do? I said, we survived the Holocaust. We'll survive this. And I feel like the song, because it is a little bit rough and compound, helps us say, one and the same time, you know, we inherit the pain and we inherit the hope.
Well, maybe the message is just the song. Maybe it's the singing. Maybe it is Kulala. Maybe it is the fact that yeah, we, you know, in the synagogue, we stand up, we do sing it, we join in with this, and we for a moment lose ourselves in melody and in the joy that takes us in the emotional experience of this. We're trying to, you know, get so much in our head, and maybe we just have to, you know, listen to the fact that at some point you have to stop thinking so much and just kind of feel it and feel exaltation and feel joy and feel a sense of deliverance and feel, you know, this hope. And maybe what we're saying and maybe what I'm learning from the two of you is that maybe it's through the act of singing that you can create that sense of hope. Maybe that's what does it. And if I were to get up in front of saying, you know, do the intellectual poetic exercise and say, we are, you know, which word is it? What song? What verse is it? No, it's the whole experience of doing this. It's Moshe Ovene Israel. It's Michamocha. It's saying that together. I can't express what that feeling is, but you know what? It's a place where I'm free. It's a place where I have joy. It's a place where I can leap beyond myself and sense that hope. Yeah.
So, you know, we have the idea of the resurrection of the dead, the physical resurrection of the dead. It's one of the only dogmas. A Jew is just supposed to believe in it. And the Talmud says, with, if I may say, I think great humor, if you don't believe in it, you won't get it. So if you believe in resurrection of the dead, you'll get it. And it isn't really in the Torah. It's alluded to, and the idea is sort of alluded to in a passage in Daniel. It's maybe alluded to in, not exactly, but kind of in the book of Isaiah a little bit. But the rabbis always, you know, minayin l'tzchiyat hametim min haTorah. Where is the resurrection of the dead found in the Torah? Truth is, it isn't, but they work hard to try to find it. And one of the examples they bring is, as Yashir Moshe, then Moses, it's not that Moses sang, but Moses will sing. And there's still a song yet to be sung, then yet to be unlocked. And that actually is a religious person. That makes me feel great, you know, that there are songs yet to be sung. That's like, we got more celebration to have.
Interesting.
So what gives the singing power is the unity and community. It comes when people are singing in harmony. Yeah. If you can imagine it being discordant, it would be unbearable. But great singing allows different voices to blend together and to become more than they are by themselves.
Interesting.
And what I wanted to say about Jeremy's comment about the compound structure of Azir Shir is that it comes as a reminder that we're on more than one journey at the same time. And some of our journeys are just beginning, others have come to an end, and we find different way stations for different journeys, places where we could stop and refresh ourselves, and we don't always know. But I think that the hope comes from the idea that we will make the next step for as long as we can, and someone after us will continue the journey.
Indeed. And so in this moment, they get to the other side, they do sing their song, and they get up the next morning. And then, of course, they have, you know, all sorts of challenges coming on the way, with challenges with water and food.
First challenges, what are they going to have for breakfast?
Exactly. But they got there. They got to the end, and they got to a new beginning. It is a gateway. This is a remarkable, remarkable moment. It's a miracle that they got there. And I guess that itself is a source of hope, that we can close our eyes, imagine ourselves in whatever condition we are in, and understand as I was trying to express the fatigue, maybe I was personifying the fatigue of, you know, two seders and all that. But there's the joy in being able to kind of get up and to sing and to be there and to not have to think through everything and just to experience that we made it. We made it. That's what they're saying. We made it. And this is a very powerful, powerful moment. We didn't get much into Shir HaShirim, but and that is, you know, recited on Shabbat Chol HaMoed. It's all about hope and the promise of renewal and spring. Anitzanim hayu ba'ar, niru ba'aretz, eta zavir igia v'kol ator nishma ba'artzenu. It's all about things that are beginning to flower, the budding and the promise that there is a future, and looking at the season and seeing that there is the possibilities of all sorts of things coming, that at this time of the year everything is being sorted out for the future in terms of,
you know, I like that you use the word promise. Shir HaShirim is just spectacular. It's such rich poetry. It's sexy and full of life in every great way. But the two characters, there's lots of nature description. There's lots of affirmation about what love is all about, such that it, among other things, gives rise to the rich midrashic tradition in Judaism and in Christianity, allegorizing this as the relationship of God to the world, or God to the covenantal people, or God to the soul, or, you know, all the above. But the two characters, to the extent that there's a plot, there's a male voice and a female voice, and they look for each other, but they never quite find each other. They're always, here comes my love, he's skipping over the hills. I look for him, I cannot find him. She actually gets, the female voice gets assaulted by the town watchman. It's a little bit, it's not terribly graphic. We don't know exactly, you know, what happens to her, although it's suggestive, whether she gets, chas v'shalom, you know, raped, or she just gets bonked on the head, or whatever it is. The thing is that Song of Songs is a song about promise, not arrival. It's about the possibility unrealized yet. And so that's, I think, what gives it some of its spiritual like usefulness and how meaningful it is, because that's what it is to be spiritual. You have hints of the wonderfulness and you experience wonderfulness, but not all the time. And sometimes it's the search that, you know, you have to, you know, keep pursuing that search.
You have to live in that. I think we're living in a well of hope, and we have to kind of draw from that all the time. I think that's part of the dynamic of life, and I think specifically of Jewish life. It's always to live with that sense that you can draw from that. And the, you know, you can read almost every text and ask this question: where is the hope in this? I could see it in the buds of spring. I could see it at the sea. I could see it from Lech Lecha, and I could see it all the way to the Hallel that we're signing on Passover. There's hope everywhere for us, and there's hope for our people, and that's what the message we want to give everybody as Pesach ends and as our time together ends. We want to leave with a message of hope that good and better days are coming for us, that we will get through our crises and our challenges as we experience them now, and that we will be able to rejoice, sing together, be together, and give all sorts of expression to our gratitude, especially to everyone for watching and listening to us over this time and all of our previous times together. We thank you for watching. We thank you for listening. And we look forward to seeing you in the next edition. In the meantime, everyone, Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. And we'll see you on the next edition of Parsha Talk.
Shabbat Shalom.
בשידור ישיר ממחנה רמה בברקשיירס.
כל רמה 102.3 מרגישים קיץ באוויר.
רדיו כל רמה 102.3 FM.
כל רמה.